All right. Sabbath blessings. Chapter 20. Prophets and Kings. If you got the book, it's page 244. And this chapter is based on 2 Kings, chapter 5. All right. Here we go. It says, now Naaman. Oh, and it's titled Naaman. That's what this one particular chapter is titled. It says, now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, had defeated the armies of Israel in the battle which resulted in the death of Ahab. Since that time, the Syrians had maintained against Israel a constant border warfare, and in one of their raids, they had carried away a little maid who, in the land of her captivity, waited on Naaman's wife. A slave, far from her home, this little maid was nevertheless one of God's witnesses, unconsciously fulfilling the purpose for which God had chosen Israel as his people. Unconsciously fulfilling the purpose for which God had chosen Israel as his people. As she, now, isn't that something? She just naturally would do those things, which is also the fruit of a Christian today, too. It's just something that naturally comes when you find Christ as Lord and Savior, and you allow him complete control of your life. You just, you know, like flowers in the grass. It's the fruits of the person. She says, as she ministered in that heathen home, her sympathies were aroused in behalf of her master, and remembering the wonderful miracles of healing wrought through Elijah, she said to her mistress, Would God, my Lord, were the prophet that is in Samaria? Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria? Okay. For he would recover him of his leprosy. She knew that the power of heaven was with Elijah, and she believed that by this power, Naaman could be healed. The conduct of the captive maid, the way that she bore herself in that heathen home, is a strong witness to the power of early home training. There is no higher trust than that committed to fathers and mothers in the care and training of their children. Parents have to do with the very foundations of habit and character. By their example and teaching, the future of their children is largely decided. This is reminds me of, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, maybe longer, my wife and I called all the children together, and I was mostly the one that needed to apologize, of course, but we apologized to the children. And I put most of the blame on myself because, you know, I'm the head of the household. I'm supposed to allow and disallow. And but Fran felt compelled to apologize as well because she was Catholic, as was I, when we raised the children. Most of the older kids were raised Catholics. And but still, we had a household, I mean, other than my anger, which I thought was normal because I was of a household where my dad was very verbal, if you will. He never beat my mom or nothing like that. And I would go a step further, though. I would be very verbal, and I would beat the house. I would never hit my wife, of course. But I did leave my mark on many walls. And so, but other than that, we weren't, as I've seen growing up and as my kids have seen growing up, a dysfunctional family. Like when you see some of these families that are just running haphazardly, I can remember one in particular. I'm not going to mention any names, of course, but I used to hang with this guy when I was a teenager, and he lived in a shack, literally. It was in a well-to-do area, but it was on the edge of the area, and his dad was just such that the guy was, you know, drunk, and the mom had to deal with it because, you know, all she could do is live and work what she could. She wasn't a drunk like he was. But then we would frequent this other guy's house across the road, and it was just, you walk in the middle of the day, and the parents were sprawled out on the floor, high on whatever they can get their hands on. It was just, amazing how some families, that's the norm. And I was, you know, because I can't fathom that. Even though I saw families do that, I saw moms and dads drunk or high on meth, or usually it was coke in them days. And I mean, their tongue hanging out of the head, kind of high, just laying there staring at the wall. And it was like the kids just stepped over mom and dad like it was no big deal. It was, you know, like they were furniture or something. And I thought, praise God. Even before I was a Christian, I'm so happy that I live in a house. Even though my dad's a bit angry, at least I got 3 squares a day. And my dad, if I needed him, I could at least get him on the phone, you know, because he was always at work. But, and I would hope my kids, of course, praise the Lord too, as many of our kids should, because there are families out there that are having a really rough go in those areas, and it's really, really difficult. So anyway, continuing, it says, there is no higher trust than that committed to fathers and mothers in the care of training of their children. Parents have to do with the very foundations of habit and character. By their example and teaching, the future of their children is largely decided. Happy are the parents whose lives are a true reflection of the divine, so that the promises and commands of God awaken in the child gratitude and reverence. The parents whose tenderness and justice and long-suffering interpret to the child the love and justice and long-suffering of God, and who by teaching the child to love and trust and obey them are teaching him to love and trust and obey his Father in heaven. Parents who impart to the child such a gift have endowed him with a treasure more precious than the wealth of all the ages, a treasure as enduring as eternity. And that's a pretty profound state when you think of that. This is one of the reasons I like to read the book of Proverbs every morning, and I think I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life now that I think about it, because of what's been going on lately. I mean, I do my regular studies, and you know, and I read Sister White, and then I have to go into Proverbs every morning. It's just because that was the very first book I read as a kid. I never forget it, because we were just talking about this today when we did our, you know, when the Sabbath broke and we prayed as a family, and I got a little bit too wordy because it went a little bit too long, but we were talking about how, or I was talking about how when I was about 8, maybe 9 years old, I opened up a Bible and I read the book of Proverbs as often as I could, because it was common sense. It was really clear and very easy to understand. And so I think from this day forward, whenever anybody asks me what Bible book should I read first, I'm going to direct them to Proverbs. And then, then after you get through there, go to John. I always used to tell them to go to John first, you know. Hold on a second. Okay, I'm going to readjust this seat. It's messing with my back. So anyway, yeah, the book of Proverbs is just amazing, especially when it gets into this area, when it starts talking about wisdom. Because when you get, you know, the wisdom from on high, it is, like she's saying here, like it says in Proverbs, in many areas, it's worth more than all the gold and the jewels and the riches of the world. It's just amazing. I think I left off in there. Let me see. Where did I leave off? I forgot to mark it. Let's see. And who by the teaching charges they are teaching them the love of the man's father in heaven. Okay, I'll backtrack it. It says, happy are the parents whose lives are a true reflection of the divine, so that the promises and commands of God awaken in the child gratitude and reverence. The parents whose tenderness and justice and long-suffering interpret to the child the love and justice and long-suffering of God, and who, by teaching the child to love and trust and obey them, are teaching him to love and trust and obey his Father. Oh, yeah, I read the whole thing here. Yeah, but it bears repeating. And she also says, parents, the Father in heaven, and parents who impart to the child such a gift hath endowed him with a treasure more precious than the wealth of all the ages. A treasure as enduring as eternity, because, well, and it's another thing too, even with this, like in Proverbs today, why do the simple want to stay simple-minded? God is offering immense knowledge to anybody and everybody if you just ask them for it and go into his word and get it. It's free, 100%. You don't have to go to college. And that's one of the other things, you know, all this stuff, so many people are locked into this idea, oh, I got to go to college, I got to get a career, I got to get a degree or whatever. You know, that's all well and good, yeah, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't. But it never used to be like that in the old days. And yeah, and the way society is designed today, you can't get a job without that degree. Right? That's the way they shove things in your face. But I know and I've seen this happen before. If you've got a talent, they don't care if you've got a degree or not in a specific area. They're going to want that talent. I mean, take, for example, hackers. How many of us have read articles in the newspaper about a 13 or a 14 or a 15-year-old kid that got caught hacking into some bank, or how about that 12-year-old kid that used a VIC-20 about 20 years ago when the VIC-20 came out, and then you got the Commodore 64 after that? That kid used a VIC-20 computer. 3K of RAM this thing had. 3K. You know, most emails have more than that today. So he had, 3K and then in a modem, a 300 baud modem, which is mind-numbingly slow, and a tape player was his media. You know, they didn't have the hard drive for the VIC-20. They had a tape player, because I had the VIC-20. It was a tape player that you used to store your data on, right? And he hacked into the Whopper. He didn't get into it because you got those seven, drones out in front of the Whopper, and the Whopper is what guards our nation's security in regards to the nuclear warheads and stuff like that. And they got, and everybody's always trying to hack it. That's why I always turn off my FTP protocols and stuff like that, my FTP stuff on all my servers. I never leave it on because every time I leave it on, by mistake, and I forget about it, somebody from China is trying to hack me. And the reason they do that is because they want to be able to use my computer to get to the Whopper so that they can cover their tracks and so they can't be caught. Well, that's what this kid did. And he got in there, and as soon as he got caught, of course, he only got past one computer. Seven you got to get past. He got past one. They arrested him, of course, took away his toys, and then offered him a big old job. The kid had the talent. And so, but still, in today's world, you're going to need a degree to do whatever you got to do. And that's, I can just see the devil's hand in that, because what happens when you go to the colleges? What do they teach you? Well, sure, they teach you some of the things that you need to know. And they also teach you drugs, sex, and rock and roll. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's ridiculous in those places, especially seminaries. Forget about it. You think you're going in there to get a degree on how to preach? No, you're getting a degree on how to bring as many people into a church and generate a large tithe, amount so that you can make millions. Oh, and by the way, I just got an email the other day from, I think it was Craig Foster, I think he's the one that sent it to me. The Seventh-day Adventist Church, that's a different one you sent me. Thank you for that one. But I got an invitation. Now, this is a little off topic, but it bears, so many people need to hear this. I'm going to put this on the SDA Apostasy site as soon as I get a chance. I just sent it to Brother Rob. The Seventh-day Adventist Church invited me to go to this one thing. Now, it wasn't the Seventh-day Adventist Church, supposedly. It was this group of churches that are gathering together independently, without any organization, to plant churches all around the country and the world, right? And then when you start going into it, into the website, and start looking around, you see stuff about Amazing Facts and, the General Conference, all this other stuff, right? And they go, then you also have this other site that you can go to get even more information called Launch Ticket. Launch Ticket is Bill Hybels from Willow Creek. You keep going and you break down into the links of that website, you'll eventually get to a page where it says, this is a Willow Creek organization. They are teaching now. They're inviting everybody to go out there and generate these 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 member churches and spreading so-called the gospel to generate income. Yeah, and NLP, exactly. So I just got it. I'm holding on to it in my SDA corruption folder. Anyway, getting back. And by the way, just like the child are trained by the parents, these General Conference leaders and stuff they're going to be held accountable for not training the people up in the way that they should go. So continuing, she says, we know not in what line our children may be called to serve. They may spend their lives within the circle of the home. They may engage in the life's common vocations or go as teachers of the gospel to heathen lands. But all are alike called to be missionaries for God, ministers of mercy in the world. They are to obtain an education that will help them to stand by the side of Christ in unselfish service. The parents of that Hebrew maid, as they taught her of God, did not know the destiny that would be hers, but they were faithful to their trust. And in the home of the captain of the Syrian host, their child bore witness to God, whom she had learned to honor. Think about that. This is neat. I mean, think about it. You think the parents had any idea that a few thousand years later that some prophet would be mentioning their daughter and we'd be reading it here in a chat room? It's amazing what our God can do with his people. Some people, wow, whoop-de-doo, I might affect one person in my life. Yeah, well, what if that one person becomes a preacher and then brings many souls to Christ? No man's an island. I mean, how many of us have seen that It's a Wonderful Life thing that the Hollywood throws out there? It's a lousy example, I know, but it's so burning everybody's brain, it's obvious. No man's an island. Everybody thinks, this is like, I like to bring that fact up when I hear of teenagers wanting to commit suicide. Well, I'm only doing this to myself. No, you're not. You're driving your parents nuts and your siblings and your friends at school. Everybody's going to grieve over you. You think that's romantic? You think it's you're going to become an icon? No, you'll be forgotten in a few months. You kill yourself. You'll just be forgotten. Your mom and dad might weep for you for a few years, but everybody else is going to think, they're gone. Oh, whoop, big whoop. They're not going to care after a while. They got to get that. But the devil makes death so attractive. It's sad. But she goes on to say that Naaman heard of the words that the maid had spoken to her mistress. And obtaining permission from the king, he went forth to seek healing, taking with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. He also carried a letter from the king of Syria to the king of Israel, in which was written the message, "Behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." That's so sad when the mind goes into that direction rather than thinking, "Well, let's drop to our knees." Yeah. She goes on to say that tidings of the matter reached Elijah, and he sent word to the king saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elijah. Through a messenger, the prophet bade him, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." Now this is sad, but in a way it had to happen, obviously. Naaman had expected to see some wonderful manifestation of power from heaven. "I thought," he said, "he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper." It's all that me thing. It's all about it's selfish. She goes on to say that when told to wash in the Jordan, his pride was touched, and in mortification and disappointment, he exclaimed, "Are not Abana and the Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them to be clean?" So he turned away and went away in a rage. The proud spirit of Naaman rebelled against following the course outlined by Elijah. The rivers mentioned by the Syrian captain were beautified by surrounding groves, and many flocked to the banks of these pleasant streams to worship their idol gods. It would have cost Naaman no great humiliation of soul to descend into one of those streams. But it was only through the following of specific directions of the prophet that he could find healing. See, a lot of us have a problem in this area. The Lord might tell you, you might have a desire in your heart, "I want to preach," or "I want to be a..." Well, anybody can preach. Let's strike that for a second. You can preach, it doesn't matter. Go out and do it. Do it. But let's say you got a man that says, "I want to be pastor. And so from this day forward, call me pastor." God bless, promises. Take care. Have a blessings day. And anybody else that left, have a blessings. I missed you. But think about that. A man says, "I shall be pastor, and so from this day forward, call me pastor." No great, humiliation of the soul and whatsoever. Nothing. I wouldn't see a lot of humiliation being brought up to get to that point. But what if the Lord would say, "I would rather you sweep the floors for a few years. 5 years, 10 years, 60 years, It doesn't matter. One day you will hit the pulpit. It doesn't matter how long I shall use you. You know, if the Lord was to speak to the man, it doesn't matter. I mean, think about it. I mean, look at the thief on the cross. How long did that man minister? A few minutes. And yet he's mentioned in the scriptures. What about this little girl here? How long did she minister? One statement, and it hits the ears of a leper? So, we serve a mighty God. Whatever he says is what matters, not whatever we want. And, but anyway, she goes on, willing obedience alone would bring the desired result. Naaman's servants entreated him to carry out Elijah's directions. If the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, they urged, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather than when he saith to thee, wash and be clean? The faith of Naaman was being tested while pride struggled for the mastery. But faith conquered, and the haughty Syrian yielded his pride of heart and bowed in submission to the revealed will of Jehovah. Seven times he dipped himself in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his faith was honored. His flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Isn't that neat? Kind of reminds you of Sarah. Sarah, you're going to have a kid. You and Abraham. And what happens? They wait, and they wait, and they wait, and all of a sudden when she's in her 90s, she has a kid. No. He decides to go ahead and, you know, with Hagar and whatnot, or she pushes the issue with Hagar, and he has Ishmael instead of waiting on Isaac, who was already promised to be there. He wanted to do things his way, just like this guy here. He expected things in a different, and I've done this many times in my past too. Specifically, the one time that I was, and this was a dream job. I mean, some people wouldn't think it a dream job, but I don't know what it is, but I like my wife will attest to this. When I drive by, especially this one in Lafayette, I drive by and I see this big apartment complex. And I go, oh, to be the head of maintenance in that place. You know, I was the head of maintenance in these other places, right? And it's exciting to be able to go and fix someone's sink or unclog a toilet or whatever, you know, and just, it's not exciting to unclog toilets and stuff, but you meet people and it's doing stuff like that. It's just, but when I was younger, I was offered a job like that. And I got the job. And the first day in the job, the guy wanted me to go clean out toilets that broke and were filled. And I says, I don't do that. I'm like, no, I'm not going to stoop that low. I wanted to be on the roof with the boss, hanging with the other guy, you know, with the boss, because there was a guy up on the roof that was friends with the boss. I wanted to be the boss's friend. I wanted to hang with him, get all the cush jobs, all the good jobs. I want to learn how to do heating and air and all this, you know, all the stuff that he was doing on the roof. I wouldn't start at the bottom. A lot of teenagers are like that. Watch, you're going to pay me $7 an hour? I'm executive material. $15 or nothing. You know, and then before you know it, they're working at McDonald's because they're stuck now. They got no choice, which isn't a bad job either, well, except for the fact that you're feeding people poison. So I wouldn't want to work there. But not a lot of CEOs come out of high school at the age of 16. It's the same thing with anything else. The Lord tests our faith, whether it's to do something or to have something done to us. Either way, he's going to test us. He's going to put us through the test to see if we're really who we say we are. That's why it's good advice to test yourself. Take stock in yourself. See where you actually do stand. What do you believe? Continuing, she says, gratefully he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, with the acknowledgement, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. In accordance with the custom of the times, Naaman now asked Elijah to accept a costly present. But the prophet refused. It was not for him to take payment for a blessing that God had in mercy bestowed. Boy, could you... A big difference from today, isn't it? Could you imagine, I know you're not going to find any prophets on TBN, even though they say they are, but could you imagine any of these guys saying, what, you want to give me money? Perish the thought. Keep it. It's not going to happen on TBN. It's not going to happen in 99.9% of the churches out there. You know, most of them will preach for the money. which I couldn't believe. I just put a video, as a matter of fact, on the main page. I've got a little video section. I had to put it on that Leroy Thompson guy. They're worshiping money. I couldn't believe the church service. And they're saying, money, 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 come to me, come to me, come to me. And he's putting his arms out forward, and then he pulls it back to his chest, and he goes, I receive it, or something like that, right? And he gets the whole church to do it with him at the same time. Because the whole church is having this big convulsion when they're doing it. And it's money. They're actually using the word money, and they're doing, oh, I just couldn't believe it. That's today's world. This is these Bill Hybels Willow Creek churches. That's what they're all about. That's why Bill Clinton and Bill Hybels were meeting and having all those meetings. Somebody said, oh, no, he's having some, you know, problems because of Monica Lewinsky and all this. No, oh, please. He was talking to the guy before he even knew Monica. Bill Clinton was meeting with Bill Hybels to do these gigantic churches for a reason. It's also obvious why Bill Clinton was taught by Jesuits at Georgetown University. They have a plan. It's in your Bibles.